You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Just when, baby. It remains to be seen whether the Rockets' NBA trade deadline strategy is a winning one. Ultimately, I think that will be judged by their success on the buyout market and with potentially Daniel House Jr., those negotiations which should happen in the days and potentially weeks ahead. But when we lead off today's show on this trade deadline day, Thursday, February 7th, let's start by talking about the most important thing, which is that they are winning on the basketball floor yet again, 127-101, going away on the road late Wednesday night against a very quality Sacramento Kings team in their gym. With that, welcome in to another new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. That includes what's going on both on the court with last night's game and off the court with all the trade deadline activity. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Thursday, we are going to get to the trade deadline and some of the sexy off-court rumors and possibilities that may exist, not just at the deadline with the moves the Rockets did make, but also things they could do in the days ahead, what we learned about the Rockets' long-term financial strategies, which potentially one upshot of the path they appear to be taking is that it could give them more flexibility in future seasons to put a contender around James Harden and Chris Paul. We'll get to that in our second and third segments of today's show, a bit of a hybrid, but I want to lead off with the most important thing, which is that the Rockets not only won the game last night in Sacramento, they won it going away. James Harden, the MVP, 36 points, 50% shooting, 8 of 13, that's better than 60% on threes, also had 6 rebounds, and for all the clowns on NBA Twitter that constantly whine about free throws, he scored 36 points on 50% shooting and only got to the free throw line twice. Ultimately, there was no real reason for Harden to put his body into harm's way and drive into the paint if A, he was making his threes, and B, the Rockets were winning by 20-plus points, which they were from pretty much the opening of the second quarter onward. Kenneth Faried had yet another double-double, his 6th in 7 games as a starter, 13 points, 11 boards in 30 minutes, 6 of 9 from the field. Chris Paul had 15 points, 11 assists, did struggle shooting the ball, 4 of 13, but ultimately I thought it was one of the best games we've seen from CP since coming back in terms of freedom of movement, how well he was able to hit the turbo button when he needed to, and I think that's reflected in his 11 assists in 30 minutes. Eric Gordon, 20 points, 7 of 14 from the field, that's 50% shooting, 40% shooting on 10 attempts from behind the arc, much more efficient after getting Monday night off to rest that right knee. As stated Monday, I was never too worried about it since they said he would come back. And the fact is, not only did he come back, he came back and shot 50% overall, 40% from behind the arc, which is a continuation of what we've seen now ever since coming back in January. It's been a disappointing season for Eric, but since coming back, you're looking at a guy who's in the low to mid-40s in overall shooting and from behind the three-point arc is now right at or slightly above 38%. So you're certainly not going to complain about that level of production from your third wheel. As far as the offensive creation goes, you know what James Harden and hopefully Chris Paul are going to be able to give you. The question is, do they have enough help? We referred to Eric Gordon and Clint Capella a season ago as the variables. Clint Capella has taken another step forward to where when he's healthy, he's not now, but when he's out there, he's more of a constant. If anything, it might be Chris Paul and Eric Gordon that are your variables now. But certainly the one constant variable going back to both last season and this season is Eric Gordon. And when you get the version that's shooting 50% overall and 40% from three, you're going to be pretty tough to beat, even against a Kings team that at over 500 this year, still 28 and 26, is pretty tough, especially at home in their gym. Rockets with the win improved to 32 and 22, which makes them 10 games over 500 for the first time this season. And my thoughts is overall for the team as a whole, it was great to see them put their foot down and win going away. If there's one thing you could point to on this road trip, which they finished up at 3-1, now somehow they're 8-4 in 12 games without Clint Capella, only expected to be 3 more that you're without him before he returns on the other side of the All-Star break. So really, you have overachieved all expectations through this stretch. If you had told the Rockets going into a four-game road trip in six nights in Denver, Utah, Phoenix, and Sacramento that they'd be 3-1, I think they would have gladly taken it, especially considering that there was no Clint Capella, you were without Chris Paul for one game, and you were without Eric Gordon for another. So I think the results have always been there. If there's one thing that you worry about just a little bit, it's the fact that the games, they have been able to win, but in this recent stretch, they have not been pretty. You haven't had the types of wins like, say, the Thunder, the Celtics, a month ago when you were, not that you were whole because you didn't have Chris Paul, but when the Rockets were clicking on all cylinders or as close to that as we have seen this season, you did see some blowout wins in there, which when you combine it with some of the roster issues, it allows you not to overextend anyone minutes-wise. So since losing Capella, the Rockets have been able to grind out wins, which has been helpful. But even when they have, you've had lots of games that have looked like the Lakers game, and they had to overcome that early deficit. Same with the Knicks, the Magic. It's nice, and the Kings are not a bad team, but they're one, especially without Iman Shumpert, who, unavailable to defend James Harden, that was the plan until the Kings traded him hours before the game, ironically, to the Rockets. Of course, the deal was not completed in time for Shumpert to play in Houston, but definitely it limited Sacramento for a young team. I think the rigors of the trade deadline and seeing multiple guys go in and out, they also made a different deal involving Justin Jackson and Zach Randolph for Harrison Barnes. So a lot of change, and even though the Kings are a good story, the Rockets, when they're right, of course they are a tier above, or at least should be. But no disrespect to the Kings, the Rockets are the better team, and for once, it's nice to see them go in and take care of business, and because of that, no one was really overextended. The most minutes you had was P.J. Tucker at 34. Look up and down. James Harden, 32. Chris Paul and Kenneth Fareed, 30. Eric Gordon, only 22. So really, you have to push him in his first game back after getting that maintenance game for his right knee. Part of it because you had three guys off the bench. James Ennis, Austin Rivers, Gerald Green, who gave you 28, 29, and 29 minutes respectively. James Ennis led the team in plus-minus with plus 23, even though he shot just 1-5. Ultimately, though, it ended up being Ennis' last game with the Rockets because he was traded early Thursday to the Sixers in what was largely a cash-saving move for the Rockets. More on that momentarily. And for now, I think the obvious takeaway is that Iman Shumpert will be getting minutes largely that previously went to James Ennis. But overall, it was a very encouraging win for the Rockets. I would call it a statement when you consider on the road against a winning team to go out and lead by nearly 30 at the break, to outscore Sacramento 44-17 in the second quarter. Actually, excuse me, I shortchanged them. They were up by more than 30, 31-76-45 at the break. And that's the level of dominance that you need to see from time to time. I know it's tough when you don't have Clint Capella, but if you can sneak a game like this here or there, then it makes it all the easier to manage minutes. It's especially helpful because you couple that with an off day Thursday and Friday and a game Saturday night. It's a pretty big one. You're next at home against Oklahoma City, ABC's primetime game of the week, and at the number three spot in the West, that's a team that you're trying to chase down. You've already beaten them once, so beating them a second time would be very big from a tiebreaker perspective and potential West ties and the standings down the line. That's a big game, and see the Rockets go out and take care of business without having to extend anyone into the upper 30s, let alone low 40s in minutes. That's a very welcome development. I don't know that you can count on it too regularly until you get Clint Capella back, but at least once in a while, you need to be able to hit that turbo nuclear button. That's what my good buddy Karthik Prasad, we had on last night's Shumpert Reaction podcast, the term he coined a year ago, and this was one of the first times that I think we've seen it from Houston this year. The last theme, before we get to all the trade deadline stuff, Austin Rivers and Gerald Green off the bench combined 37 points on 13 of 29 from the field. Gerald, for the second time in three games, had 25 points. He shot 8 of 17 overall and 4 of 9 from behind the arc. Austin, he was just 2 of 7 from 3, so his 3-point stroke still is not where you would like it to be. I'm personally not panicked over it because last year he shot nearly 38% from 3 on very high volume. I think ultimately he'll get it straightened out, but inside the arc, he attacked, he drove, he had a couple of assists, he made 3 of his 5 shots, he attacked off the dribble, and overall, he was plus 19, Gerald was plus 16, and it's reminiscent of what they did in Saturday's win over Utah when they combined for 41 points then. Last night it was 37, but when you have those guys off your bench giving you that level of production after a starting lineup that has Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon, and will soon have Clint Capella, and then imagine when your bench has Shumpert added to it, and Kenneth Fareed, once Capella returns, and that puts the Manimal in a role that can really let his energy shine, you can do a total 180 with your bench production relative to earlier in the year. Remember when October, November, the depth was such an issue? Well, now you're seeing signs, and I think some of it, with Rivers in particular, and maybe a little bit of Green, they've been overextended. Well, now that you're starting to get deeper, you're starting to get more guys that you can trust, you don't have to ride those guys as much as you have earlier this year. And in terms of the Rockets bench, there are going to be some nights where those two are hot, and when they are, they can carry you. They did it last night. They did it Saturday night in Utah. But even if they aren't, the fact is you'll soon be able to throw the defense of Iman Shumpert out there, the hustle, the energy plays of Kenneth Faried, and all of a sudden, that's even before discussing buyout possibilities, this Rockets bench is turning into a strength. So we know the Rockets are top-heavy. Assuming they're healthy, that big four, Harden, CP3, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, you're going to be plenty talented enough in your starting lineup. The issue for the Rockets is their supporting cast. And so if you have Gerald Green and Austin Rivers giving you that level of explosion from time to time, and then you combine it with the defense of Shumpert, the energy of Kenneth Faried, and hopefully one more buyout acquisition, I think we're starting to see this bench unit, despite the narratives early in the year, and of course a lot of it goes back to Daryl Morey, the amount of guys he's gotten on the cheap this year, Faried, Austin Rivers, we'll see what he does with buyouts, Daniel House was a useful band-aid, maybe he'll be able to come back, we have to wait and see what happens in the days and weeks ahead, but even with a little bit of uncertainty at the moment in terms of the exact roster composition, on top of James Harden doing what he does, now his 30-point streak at 28 games, which is the third longest in NBA history, scoring 36 points on 50% shooting and better than 60% from three, the reigning MVP of the league being the star that he is. You have that, a healthy Chris Paul, and Eric Gordon that's getting healthier, and then Clint Capella coming back after missing just three more games. Yeah, the starters are going to be fine. The issue is whether the bench is deep enough, and for the first time in a while, I think you're starting to feel pretty good about that Rockets bench. So there are some questions. We'll talk about those on the other side as we break down the trade deadline, what did and didn't happen, and what may happen over the coming days with regards to buyouts and the open roster spot. But for right now, to lead off, it's important to note just how big that win was. 3-1 on the road trip, even without Clint Capella, and with CP and Gordon each missing a game. 8-4 through 12 games without Clint Capella, and now a season-best 10 games over 500 at 32-22, and now the three games for the All-Star break, home against Oklahoma City, home for Dallas, at Minnesota, they're all certainly winnable. I don't know that they'll take all of them without Capella, that might be a lot to ask, but if you can get to the All-Star break at double digits over 500, considering the headwinds, that is awfully impressive for a Rockets team that, because of the roster limitations, the injuries, we have not seen their best version yet. So if they can be double digits over 500 like this, just imagine what they might be able to do in the days ahead, weeks ahead, I should say, when it comes to both potential buyouts, we'll talk about that momentarily, and also the looming return of Clint Capella. Now for the remainder of the show, we'll turn our attention to the trade deadline. I wanted to lead with the 127-101 win the Rockets posted over the Kings, because certainly that's a statement win on the road against a winning team in the West, even without Clint Capella. That's a big deal. That shouldn't be lost. That said, I'm not naive. On February 7th, trade deadline day, and one that was pretty active for the Rockets, even if not that much immediately impactful to their rotation, I know that's what a lot of people want to talk about, and even if the moves today did not have any drastic correlation to what the team's ultimate chance of winning a title is this year, there are definitely a lot of fascinating takeaways and questions that the moves up to the deadline leave us to ponder in the weeks, months, and as I said, potentially even years ahead. Now, I want to state off the top, we're not going to talk too much about the Iman Shumpert deal from Wednesday night. If you want recaps on what his fit is in Houston, that deal, what he brings to the table, check out our post-deadline show from Wednesday evening, or post-Shumpert show, I should say, not the deadline, and myself and Karthik Prasad, Stanford KP on Twitter, we went into that pretty well last night. Of course, we'll be touching on Shumpert because it's correlated with a lot of other moves, especially the decision to trade away James Ennis, but we're not going to spend too much time on Iman Shumpert. We know who he is. He's 28 years old. He's 6'5". He's a 3-and-D swingman. Houston thinks he's going to bolster the bench. He's played for Mike D'Antoni before in New York, so he should be a pretty seamless fit into the system. We'll just have to see what happens starting Saturday night when the Rockets take on the Thunder at Toyota Center, a big game which the Rockets could come within a couple of games in the standings of the Thunder for the number 3 slot in the Western Conference. As far as Thursday's deadline moves, though, it was indirectly related to the Shumpert deal. They moved James Ennis to Philadelphia, got a 2021 second-round pick swap for it, and in large part that was done because once you acquired Shumpert, there wasn't long-term going to be a path to minutes for James Ennis, so it made sense to potentially move on from him. And then the other move and the combination of the two trades the Rockets made, not just letting James Ennis go, but also trading Nick Stauskas and Wade Baldwin, the throw-ins you had to take on in the Shumpert deal Wednesday, moving them to Indiana. Well, because you've been able to trade both Ennis and Stauskas and Baldwin, that duo, at the moment, the Rockets are actually below the luxury tax line, which has implications not just for owner Tillman Fertitta right now, but also for down the road, what the Rockets can and can't do building their roster in future seasons. So I've seen a lot of mixed reviews on the deals. So I want to be clear. Let's start with James Ennis. He's been a better shooter than expected this season at close to 37% from three, but a worse defender than expected. So it's been a bit of a wash. And for a Rockets team that already feels pretty good about what it has on the offensive end of the floor, it seems pretty clear that long-term, assuming health, Iman Shumpert was a better fit for those minutes. Because Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Clint Capella, that's going to be, assuming health, your playoff starting lineup. And then you look at the bench, you've got Austin Rivers, you've got Gerald Green, now you've got Iman Shumpert, you've got Kenneth Faried, and you're presumably going to have at least one more quality player, a depth signing, maybe Wayne Ellington in the buyout market, maybe it's bringing back Daniel House, but you're already looking at least 9 and most likely 10 players that would all be ahead of James Ennis in the pecking order. So losing James, is it a depth hit? Sure, but the truth is, if one of those, especially the bigger guns, gets hurt in the playoffs, I always say, well, Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, they've had injuries this year. What if they're not healthy? Well, if they're not, you're not winning a title, so I really don't know why you're sweating moving on from James Ennis, like they're going to be able to replace one of those guys. Ultimately, I think the Rockets feel pretty good about their top 9 or 10, and Ennis did not crack that. Now, I think he's been good in the locker room. He's useful in small doses. He hasn't been the healthiest this year, so maybe he could have gotten better down the line. And in a perfect world, would they have kept him as the 11th or 12th man on their bench? Sure, absolutely. But in this case, the upside of getting under the luxury tax is significant enough to where it's not worth it just to keep a guy who's going to be your 11th or 12th man as insurance, especially because if that insurance is needed, your upside of winning the title is probably out the window anyway. And anytime you have a contending team that has James Harden in his prime and starts talking about cutting costs, there's a segment of the fan base that's naturally going to be upset at the owner and feeling a sense of, I'm not sure what the word is, I'll go with skepticism over why they aren't quote-unquote all in with James Harden in his prime. And my response to this is that it's situational. It certainly was not easy for the Rockets to make these moves to get under the tax. If they wanted to be a below-tax team, they would have never put themselves so many million dollars over the tax. There was never some mandated scheme, because if that were the case, they would have never did what they did in the offseason earlier this year, let alone trying to trade for Jimmy Butler and some of the other big names. No, the Rockets were perfectly content, the evidence is there, to pay the luxury tax this year. It's not just the fact that Tillman Fertitta on Media Day said that they would pay the tax. We have tons of actions that they took over the summer as far as guys they signed during the season. I mean, think about it. They signed Chris Paul to a 4-year deal at roughly $40 million a year. I'm not sure if he had another max offer, certainly not for that amount of years, on the market last summer. If they wanted to play hardball, if every penny, if it was a penny-pinching scenario, no, they don't do that the first second that free agency opens. No, there are lots of moves the Rockets could have made, and they certainly would not have been willing to trade the farm for Jimmy Butler, who would have been due a Supermax extension. And no, the Rockets wouldn't trade four first-round picks for a Jimmy Butler rental. Of course, they'd be planning on re-signing him after the year and dealing with the consequences later. So, no, the Rockets are not being cheap. There was not a plan all along to magically shed all these contracts in this magician act that Daryl Morey pulled off. It's more a reflection of once the deadline came and went, and it was evident that the Rockets were not going to be able, they didn't have the assets to make a bigger move like Toronto with Marc Gasol, even though I know there's not a fit there. I'm just talking about bigger names that actually moved. Philadelphia with Tobias Harris. The Rockets didn't have the assets to get in the game for the truly big names at the deadline. And Anthony Davis didn't get moved. Butler obviously was moved to Philadelphia earlier this year. Once it became evident that Houston was not able to make a bigger move, and then the trade with both Brandon Knight and Marquese Chriss happened, dropping down to the $11 million salary figure of Iman Shumpert from nearly $18 million combined with Knight and Chriss, the Rockets were close enough to the tax line that they said, why don't we take advantage of it this season? Because the stated criteria, and this is not me guessing, this is not me projecting, Tilman Fertitta told this to us on Media Day. Right when the season opened, I was the guy that asked the question. He said luxury tax was not a big deal. That was not his concern. $5 or $10 million was not going to keep him from competing for a title. His concern, and this is true from 90% of the NBA owners, so no, it's not just Houston. If you're bothered by this, you're bothered by the entire league. It's the repeater tax, which kicks in when you have been a luxury tax team for three times in 4 years. Well, there's a problem with that, and it's that with Chris Paul signed to a four-year deal and James Harden basically on a five-year deal, including the Supermax that kicks in after this season, you're above $70 million between just those guys this season. Actually, no, you're a hair below 70 because Harden's still making $30 million, but next year you'll be above $75 million, and from the 2020 season onward, you'll be $80 million and up just between those two players. And yet, based on the stated criteria of avoiding the repeater tax, again, this is not new. We knew it going into the season, and the same is true with 90% of NBA teams. The Rockets were on a path to where they were going to have to make some radical changes. I talked about that hypothetical last night on our Shumpert recap show with Karthik Prasad. The Rockets were going to have to make some major deals in one of those future years if they were going to avoid the repeater tax in what amounts to this four-year trial run with both CP3 and Harden signed to these mega deals. Well, what you have done by getting under the tax this year, you are deferring the start of that so-called clock, that's what I'm choosing to call it, for the repeater tax until at least next season. So because of that, you would not be subject to the repeater tax until the fourth season, i.e. if you pay the tax after the 3 years that you are a luxury tax-paying team. What this means is that you are guaranteed for the length of Chris Paul's contract not to be a repeater tax team if you're able to avoid the tax this year. So the reason why it was important to dump James Ennis, at the end of the day, is the $2 million salary all that important? No. But it's the fact that it gives you so many more options for down the road that you're not having to think if you're Daryl Morey, okay, this is the year that I've got to get under the luxury tax somehow. Well, now everything is on the table. You don't have to worry about 2020, 2021, whatever it may be. Okay, this is the year that somehow I've got to, even with Chris Paul and James Harden, once Harden gets to the Supermax level and Paul averaging more than $40 million a year, now that worry is gone. And the Rockets were not going to do this all along. Again, if they had been able to land a bigger fish, a Jimmy Butler, which they tried to do, and Anthony Davis, they would have gladly gone so-called all-in on this season and worried about the rest later. Unfortunately, they weren't able to pull off one of those deals, and no, it's not because they wouldn't spend, it's because they didn't have the assets in terms of young players, draft picks that are especially desirable. So once the bigger deals didn't come to fruition, and you find yourself in a scenario where the only thing standing between you and getting this obligation off the books is James Ennis and giving up a future second to offload Nick Skauskas and Wade Baldwin, why would you not do it? Now, I will say this. Tilman Fertitta is a relatively new owner. And I understand that because he has not spent at a tax level to this point, some of you are going to be skeptical. That's fair. I understand if you don't want to buy in until you see him do it. All I would urge you to do at this point is to put away the pitchforks until we get to this summer, until we get to next year. And if they continue to make these types of decisions, then yeah, it's fair to be frustrated and disillusioned with the vision of the franchise and whether they're willing to compete. Right now, there's an extremely plausible basketball case to where once the Rockets couldn't make any big moves and the only thing standing between them getting under the tax was the move for Amon Shumpert and then sending out James Ennis. By the way, the Rockets are a better basketball team. Let's make no mistake about it. Picking up Shumpert in place of Ennis, you're a better team than you were 24 hours ago, and you're under the tax. If you can rid yourself of that obligation and basically take yourself out of repeater tax territory for the duration of the Chris Paul contract, that's significant upside. Now, I understand that because you are getting rid of this on the front end, then that means you don't have to worry about the repeater tax until after the CP contract, and they're not going to give him another mega deal. So the pressure is on. And starting this summer, yeah, you better see Tillman Fertitta spend. I'm right there with you. For example, Shumpert, if he plays well, the Rockets will have his bird rights. I'm not saying that they should give him anything, but they should better bake, if he plays well, a good faith effort to retain him. Hopefully they will. Maybe they'll spend the non-taxpayer MLE, which is more money. That's how they got P.J. Tucker 2 years ago. So it's okay to have caution. It's okay to have high expectations and feel like Fertitta better deliver in terms of paying or you'd be disappointed. All I would tell you is that at this point, you're a better basketball team than you were yesterday, and there is a highly realistic and plausible scenario as to why you would do this aside from just being cheap. Quite frankly, if you look at it, once the Rockets weren't able to make the big moves, it makes sense. So I understand where the Rockets are coming from. I also understand, because Fertitta is a new owner, some of you are going to be skeptical. That's fine. I get it. I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong, because really the track record is so small, we can't say that much. All I'm saying is that I would not jump to any conclusions at this point. Wait and see. We'll see what happens in the playoff run this year. And then as far as Fertitta, the willingness to spend, the proof will be in the pudding. We'll see down the road this summer, next season. They need to spend. But now that you're going to apparently be under the luxury tax team, you'll have avenues to do it. Will they? Stay tuned. That's what we'll find out in the months ahead. As we close out the podcast, I want to turn our attention back to the more near term. The second segment in our first, I would say, deadline discussion, I wanted to lead with the discussion about the years ahead, because clearly today, aside from Shumpert making you a better basketball team, which we discussed yesterday, the biggest takeaway is that now, because it appears at the moment that you are beneath the luxury tax, you're not going to have that obligation in the years ahead to always, or at least find 1 year that you are beneath the tax line so that you don't pay the very punitive repeater tax penalties. So it gives you more flexibility in the years ahead, and that's a big deal when you want to maximize the window for James Harden and Chris Paul. Realistically, the best thing you can do to win a title is to give yourself the broadest window that you can. And this season, it doesn't really make a big difference to your chances, because once the big deals, the likes of Jimmy Butler, Anthony Davis, didn't pan out, you just have to make the best of what you can as far as your current group, and then, you know, a minor upgrade, which they got in Iman Shumpert. So it doesn't really hurt you this year. And on paper, it gives you a lot more flexibility in the years ahead. And for those who are arguing that, well, Chris Paul's 33 years old, he's injury prone, need more help. Okay, well, he's 35 in a couple of years, then he'll need even more help. And now you don't have to worry about the repeater tax on the later years of that Chris Paul contract. There's a basketball reason. I understand the skepticism, because financially you guys haven't seen Tillman Fertitta invest at an extremely high tax level yet, and that's fine. But again, I lead off with that discussion because certainly it ties into the ownership, long-term philosophies, and potentially it could be a real boon for the Rockets in the years ahead. Will it be? Time will tell. As far as the immediate future, what it means is that the Rockets are probably unlikely on the buyout market to use what's left of their mid-level exception, at least not to the fullest extent, because I believe even though it would be prorated, that would be enough to push the Rockets back in the tax territory. And it's not that you want to avoid taxes at all costs, it's that the difference between not being a taxpayer team and being a taxpayer team, even if it's just a few dollars, then that's enough to where it would constrain you down the line with regards to being subject to the repeater tax after the third season of the James Harden-Chris Paul partnership under their current contracts. So the Rockets may not be able to use their full mid-level exception. It's also unclear exactly how quickly that they're going to be able to act, because with contracts being prorated, the more you can wait, be it a buyout target, Daniel House Jr., wherever it may be, then the less close you'll ultimately be to that line. You'll get more wiggle room. There's also, in terms of the Rockets' luxury tax, also hinges somewhat on some of the bonus clauses in Clint Capela's contracts, such as his defensive rebounding rate, his free throw rate. So there's lots of moving pieces to this. Now, with the moves they made, Ennis, Stauskas, and Baldwin all out, that technically opens up three roster spots. But that's a little misleading. First, they're not going to fill all three. You have to have 14, but with the Rockets trying to avoid the luxury tax, they're not going to, at this point in the year, fill out a 15th spot just to have someone. That's silly. So realistically, there's just two, and they do have 2 weeks to fill those. So the Rockets may take their time. They have a couple of weeks left, and because of that, each day, the prorated portion goes down a little bit, so the Rockets won't be too aggressive in the buyout market, at least to start with. As I understand, they might can be with one slot, but ultimately, if they can buy a few more days, that will help. The tricky issue for the Rockets is that it's going to be about the role, and that's why it may take a little bit of time beyond just money. It's about who's willing to step in and take a gig that may not be always in the rotation. Wes Matthews was mentioned as a target for the Rockets, and he did negotiate a buyout with the Knicks today. The downside, he's going to the Pacers, because with lots of these buyout candidates, and with Wes only 32 years old, they're trying to play for their next contract, and who are we to judge them for that? The Pacers can offer him a bigger role, and the Pacers only are giving him the minimum, but because he's already getting his original payment somewhere else, that's why the mid-level exception, even if you could spend it, it may not be that influential anyway, because most of these guys are already getting paid on their original deals. So with Wes Matthews, the Rockets would have liked him, but ultimately he wants to play more so that he can put himself in better position for the market this summer. I think that played into when the Rockets were able to get Kenneth Faried. Faried negotiated his buyout earlier. He did not, because he waited until after the Clint Capela injury. At that point, even though he'll be with the Rockets once Clint comes back, he does now have 10 or so games of starting level tape that he'll be able to take on the market this summer and say, see, this is what I can provide. As mentioned earlier, after last night, he's had double-doubles in 6 of the last 7 games. So that's what's tricky. I think Wayne Ellington is a target. There are others they could go after, but it's not always going to be easy. And it's not just about what the Rockets will spend. It's also about who is willing to accept that role. There are going to be some players that want a chance to contend for a ring, and many of them are older, such as Joe Johnson a year ago. That might be a fit. Not Joe, but you could see someone from that similar career arc. But you might not be able to get a hotter ticket that's younger simply because of the role. It's not the money. It's that they want a more consistent gig than what the Rockets are going to be able to offer at this point in time. That also might be something that pushes them further down the road towards Daniel House and bringing him back. Because if you're looking at guys who are in the tier of, say, Joe Johnson a year ago that are older without much upside, then that might make it more likely that the Rockets just bite the bullet and concede and give House the one-year deal that he is looking for as a younger player with more upside. I'm not saying the Rockets are to that phase yet. Wayne Ellington can be a pretty elite shooter, so that's one name that the Rockets are rumored to have interest in. We'll see who else, now that the deadline is passed, gets their release. I don't think the Rockets are going to be looking for big bodies unless it's DeAndre Jordan, and for now it still sounds like he's staying in New York. Rockets feel pretty good about the center spot with Capela and Faried. I think they're looking for either another rebounder or another shooter, someone that can play a spot role when needed. There are still some guys out there, and who knows if others shake free, but if you can't get a top-of-the-line guy, it might further push them to Daniel House, even if they lose him after the year. Again, if you do nothing, the odds are he's going to leave as a free agent anyway, so they might end up gambling on the upside rather than taking an older player that doesn't seem to have that much in the tank, like, say, they did a year ago with Joe Johnson. So there's lots of options the Rockets could go, but I would say, number one, if they strike out on the first wave, it does make Daniel House Jr. a little more possible. And secondly, I know some will say, well, how much of a difference would it make if you were spending the mid-level exception? Honestly, I'm not sure it would make that big of a difference, because look at Wes Matthews. He's going to the Pacers not because of the money. He's going because of the role. And for the upper-tier buyouts, I'm sure the Rockets will have their hands in a lot of cookie jars, but whether they can actually get one of these guys to sign on the dotted line, we'll have to wait and see. The Rockets will ultimately fill two of those roster spots. They're pretty optimistic about it. But as far as exactly who they get and how quickly, again, they might be incentivized to wait a little bit just to make sure those prorated portions go down a little bit, give them some wiggle room with the exact luxury tax line. But beyond that, it's not going to be easy to get a Wes Matthews because the Rockets don't have a clear-cut role that they can give them from day one. So keep that in mind. Final thought I want to get to before we close out this show. Apologies for going a little long, but this has been a very busy day. I do think one of the most important things for the Rockets, besides the fact that they did improve their defense with Iman Shumpert at this deadline, and potentially they give themselves more flexibility in future years by getting underneath the tax line, one of the biggest takeaways for Houston moving forward, in my opinion, is that the vast majority of the bigger deals happened out east. We mentioned Toronto with Marc Gasol, Philadelphia with Tobias Harris. No one amongst the teams that the Rockets are directly competing with in the West, Oklahoma City, even not just the trade deadline, we heard them linked to Wes Matthews. Wes is not going there. The Warriors stood pat. So did the Spurs. The Blazers didn't do a whole lot. The only team in the Western Conference playoff picture that did anything was the Clippers, and by losing Tobias Harris, now they made a couple of decent smaller moves on deadline day. Zubac from the Lakers, they got JaMychal Green and Garrett Temple, the once-rumored Rockets package, but when you're losing Tobias Harris, it's hard to say that you're a winner of the trade deadline, at least for this season. So you look up and down the West, San Antonio, Utah, the Jazz were rumored with a lot of bigger targets. None of them got to the finish line. So the fact is, it's not that the Rockets stood pat, and watched their competition make a move that better positioned them. If anything, when you look at the playoff teams in the Western Conference, you could argue that to this point, Iman Shumpert is one of the bigger deals that's happened. So everything is competitive, and one small silver lining I would urge you guys to keep in mind with this is that, at least for once, it's the Eastern Conference that made the bigger moves, and that's not something that you really have to worry about unless you have the good problem of beating the Golden State Warriors 4 times out of 7. I think the Rockets will happily accept that so-called problem if and when they get there. So for the Rockets, it's a fairly quiet deadline, at least in terms of marquee moves. Now, they certainly were active. They'll make more deals in the days ahead on the buyout market, free agency, however you want to refer to it. But as far as the season as a whole, it's hard to say they took a step back. If anything, I think relative to 2 days ago, they're in a better position because the Rockets are a better team with Iman Shumpert and the competition. They had an opportunity to get better, and for the most part in the West, they did not. So even though this trade deadline has been met with mixed reviews largely amongst the Rocket fan community, at least from what I can see on Twitter, by and large, while it's not a home run, I think it's a pretty successful one, even if it's not the sexy one that you might have imagined with the Rockets making one of the celebratory deals. So with that, I believe that's where we'll wrap up on this Thursday afternoon. As always, I appreciate you guys so much for tuning in, and if you want more content before our next episode, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show is on there at Locked On Rockets, and also don't forget to check out our Locked On NBA Net handle. That's the curated feed for our experts across the Locked On Podcast Network. Also, because we've got that great network, you can listen to us and subscribe at any number of podcast platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, so on and so forth. Search for Locked On Rockets. You can even say play podcast Locked On Rockets on your voice assistant provider or smart speaker and find our most recent episodes that way as well. If you would subscribe, though, leave 5-star reviews. That's in addition to just listening. That's how you can make us look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, if you'd be kind enough to consider advertising yourself, we've got some great introductory specials and a booming audience with the trade deadline season, buyouts, and then the playoff run coming up. LockedOnRockets@gmail.com is a great way to get in contact with me, and I would love to give you the scoop on some of the things that we can offer you as an advertiser, and that's how you can grow both your business and also help us here at Locked On Rockets, your Houston Rockets fan community. Also, beyond that email address, if you want to reach out that way or others, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, LockedOnRockets.com, the aforementioned Twitter account, don't hesitate to reach out for other reasons as well. Questions about the team, suggestions for the show. If there's anything we can do to make this experience better for you as a Rockets fan or you as a human being, I would absolutely love to hear from you. Don't hesitate to call on me for anything we can do to bolster your experience. So for today, on deadline day, Thursday the 7th, this will do it. As of now, my plan is to take a couple of days off. It has been quite a busy week, and then come back after Saturday night's game, primetime special between the Thunder and the Rockets. But who knows if there's breaking news before then on the buyout market or anything else that shakes free. Of course, we'll be here to cover it for you because that's what we do here at Locked On Rockets, your daily home for coverage of Houston Rockets basketball. For now, enjoy the rest of your week and come back soon when we'll be breaking down, most likely, Rockets Thunder this weekend, a big game for the Rockets as they continue their climb up the Western Conference standings.